I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brothers and sisters to dwell together in unity. President Hunnicutt, and to all the members of the faculty, board of directors, student body, and many friends, the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and especially to those of you who are in attendance for the E.Y. Mullins Lectureship on Preaching. I am pleased to be here with you. It has been a long time since the first contact to make this event possible, but I am thankful that out of the hustle and bustle of the New York City, we have a chance to come for tranquility in Louisville. I want you to know that I have had a wonderful continuing relationship with Professor Cox in regards to the work with homiletics, and I felt a natural sense of welcome when he picked me up, and so it is good to be here. Also, it is possible to be refreshed by my colleagues who will be lecturing and in between writing my Lenten series for when I get back, I'll be listening in too. I think this will be a very significant time of refreshment of spirit. Now I want to read for you and with you from the book of Exodus, chapter 3, and I will be reading verses 1 through 12. I will be reading from the Revised Standard Version. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. And he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and lo, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. Then he said, Do not come near. Put off your shoes from your feet. For the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me. And I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring forth my people, the sons and daughters of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, But I will be with you. And this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought forth the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God upon this mountain. The word of the Lord. There comes a time when it is clear that God has heard the cry of the oppressed and has come down to deliver them. Are we in the midst of a season of abundant manifestation that God has heard the cries around the world and that God is indeed opening up a season of deliverance? Lech Walesa, Poland. Gorbachev, Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. Mandela in Southern Africa. I get the impression that we are in the midst of the time when it could be said almost worldwide, I have heard the cry of the people, people longing for liberty, for freedom, and I have come down to set in motion that process that will set them free. I think we are in such a time. I am not sure, as I come in as a visitor, what our own particular stake in liberty might be at this time from where we sit and stand and serve. We do, even in the United States, live in a time when there are forces which restrain the freedom of the people. Some are restrained by poverty, and they cry out. And I think God has heard and has come down to deliver those who are right on the edge of survival because of the poverty of basic subsistence requirements. There are restraining forces that I sometimes call provincialism. Regions which by virtue of their own identification and self-understanding make difficult new paths and new possibilities. It happens in the culture sometimes, a kind of cultural paranoia where one group will get the back up to protect against the erosion of their securities they have known. It happens in ecclesiastical precincts of fear where people are not set free to be all they were ever meant to be. I think drugs. Certainly from where I come, I know not about your community, but drugs are holding people hostage. AIDS threatens to turn whole neighborhoods into a hospice. The walking living dead just waiting for the moment when the signs break out on the skin or the erosion of strength from within. There are many, many problems. Bondage is not only in the Soviet Union or in Poland or in South Africa. We are bound, I think, by an extraordinary epidemic in our time from which we need deliverance. We need to be set free. There, you may not have heard about it, there is a malaise which is sweeping our nation. It is a glandular disorder which is experienced almost everywhere. It is a glandular disorder, and when this gland is not working right, an energy inhibiting enzyme is released. And also there is deposited an irritant within the body which cries out for first one thing and another to hold back the horror of the condition which the body perceives. You all haven't heard about it down here. It is, this glandular disorder is a disorder of the PM gland. Do you know anything about, is there a doctor in the house? The PM gland is the purpose and meaning gland, and it's disordered all across the secular society. Something's wrong, and folks are bound by first one condition and another. And even if you have not been crying, the cries have gone out and our needs are storming the gates of heaven. And I believe as I look around the world, that I think a contemporary reading of the text is, I have heard the cries of my people. And I have come down that I might deliver them. The only problem is that for some strange reason, it's seeming to take a long time. But I think I'm on to something in the text we have read. I think that the problem is that the deliverance which God brings usually takes place in two phases. Phase two is the phase when God puts into the heart and the mind of a chosen leader these words. Go down and tell Pharaoh, let my people go. But that's phase two. Phase one is when God sends the angel to the prospective leaders. And the message that the angel is given is this: in order to let my people go, I need first to let my leaders go. Phase one is the emancipation of the leaders from whatever it is that restrains them and keeps them from going down to Pharaoh to say to the powers which oppress, let my people go. So I thought this would be just the right thing to talk about to you, because I hear gathered in this place, we are likely to have some of the people whom God has chosen to fulfill the promise that I have heard the cries of my people and I have come down, and that I understand that if God is going to do much in this town, in this region, and in this world, some of you in here are likely to be the instruments through whom God will work. So this morning, I simply want to talk about letting the leaders go. Because if you abound, if you are not free, if you have not been emancipated from whatever would restrain your obedient and joyful and courageous response to the mission which God has given you, then it might be a long time before we go let the people go. We got to let the leaders go. So, although it is not printed in the text, I just read by homiletical inspiration that the preliminary action had to take place. So I see the angel sent from heaven, go down and set the leaders free. When we talk about leaders, I think I need to acknowledge that there are upfront leaders and outback leaders. That like in every major movie, you got the so-called bit parts, but without the bits, the parts will not come together to set free the one who will take center stage. And so I want just to move, you know that I'm going to be talking about Moses and trying to look at what kind of restraints there might have been on him and what happened to set him free. But before getting to that, I want to look at the angel beginning to work to set the leaders free. Leaders, those who set the course. those who move ahead, those who affect the direction, those who are able to mark out the course upon which progress can be made. I see the angel working in the background already, Amram and Jochebed. I do not know what they were doing during these times when Pharaoh had said that all the boy babies would have to be killed. But anyway, I suspect some parents decided not to have children. The mere fact that a child would be born who would be male and the parents would have to destroy that which they have given life to, perhaps some said no. But anyway, Amram and Jochebed went on and had a child. And the mother, bless her heart, the angel had to set her free. I do not know how many mothers actually did it. It was decreed by the king. But this mother said, no, I'm not going to do it. And I see her refusing to be intimidated by the royal decree. I see her defying the demand for death. She refused to be an agent of death. She made a little basket for this little boy. When she saw that she could not keep him any longer, there was a vigor in this boy. Even as a three-month-old baby, you couldn't shut him up there. Not this Moses. Maybe indicating that there is in this child the energy that looks like he is going to be a leader. It looks like it because mama couldn't even keep him quiet. So she put him in a basket, pitched it inside and out, and sat it out there on the water. And the angel has set her free to participate in the great deliverance. And Miriam, bless her heart, stood to see what would happen. I like that. Stood to see what would happen is the way you live when you are an impoverished person. As a person who is powerless, you are not always aware of the capacity to state what you want, to do it with dispatch, and to make sure it's going to happen. So the text, I think, puts it just right. Stood by to see what would happen. They had a plan, but you have to talk about your plan as if, let's see what might happen. So it is as if they didn't know where Pharaoh's daughter took her daily bath. Everybody knew what was going on. They knew the place. And so she stands. I like Miriam. I do. I like her. She transcended the slave girl mentality. She became a consultant and a facilitator for royalty. You understand what I am talking about? When Pharaoh's daughter saw this thing and sent her maidens to fetch it, she saw right off it's a Hebrew child. And she wasn't dumb. She knew it was her father's rule that every boy baby had to be destroyed. And yet, quickly, while she is deciding what she must do about this thing, up comes the slave girl. And I like this dialogue. Please let me engage a little bit in the dialogue. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh, and I like this, see, she's royalty. Listen at what Pharaoh's daughter said to her. These one-word orders. Pharaoh's daughter said, "Go," as if she was giving orders. She wasn't giving orders. She was taking orders. She didn't know that. So the girl went and called the child's mother, and Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you wages." May I meddle just a little bit? I don't even know whether or not Pharaoh's daughter was married. There was nothing in the exegesis to indicate it. I do not know whether she was or not. Should I read in my own sociological expectation into this text? But I'm really raising the question about sometimes God uses folks that may not be configured as anticipated. And yes, I am for solid families. Yes, I think the pattern is a male and a female. But being a black boy who came up in a community where most of us were nourished sometimes by folks that were just mamas. I just asked that. But anyway, the woman took this child. But that's, I know you all are ready for me to come on to the main point. But when you are talking about the liberation that God intends, you don't know where the main point is. You don't know where the crucial moment is. You do not know where somebody's refusal to act in a liberating mode may prevent the full revelation of God's plan. It may be that some little part, like a little woman sitting on a bus refusing to get up, may be the major part. Maybe it was not Martin Luther King. Maybe Sister Rosa was it. You don't know. You don't know who the liberator is here. Oh, I know a lot of it's going to happen through the president. But you may have a bit part. You. You don't know what will deliver the church from its provincialism. You may have a part. I know the messengers make the decisions, and I know the leaders enforce it. You don't know who is going to play them. Hey, little fella, you may be the one. A bit part that you may play to be the instrument of God's deliverance. We just don't know. Therefore, everybody has to stand ready, because when God gets ready, you got to move. Now, for Moses, there will not be a necessity to spend a lot of time with Moses here, because you know the story so well. Here is Moses, handpicked, drawn out of the water for God's liberating purpose, and yet he's not yet free himself, not to do what God wants him to do. He is a man inhabited by death and life at the same time, as most of us are. Metabolism involves the breaking down of cells and the building up, and only when the building up is faster than the tearing down does life remain sustained. But Moses is in the house of Pharaoh, but within him is the longing to be a liberator for his people. And the problem is that from what I read at this point, Moses has not decided to move out of the palace. I mean, I can't tell. I think he wants to stay in the palace because there is power in the palace. There are provisions in the palace. There is security in the palace. And if he can stay in the palace, then he can use the power, the security, and the comforts as a launching pad for the liberating activity for the brothers and the sisters. If he can hold on to his place of power and at the same time use the power over here to achieve goals over here. Sounds incendiary to me, doesn't it? The implications of what I am talking about. Namely, most of us who want to do the work of the Lord assume, and I think rightly so, that you gotta have a base of operations. You gotta have a place of power. You can't throw your power away and get anything done. And the problem for most of us is that most days we do not know what we value most highly, the power or the prospect of being an instrument. On a good day, it's balanced out. On a bad day, the power wins out. That's where Moses was, and I think that's where all of us are. I think that you can't really be a liberator, not much, as long as you jealously guard your power base. Because probably the power base upon which you stand is one of the obstructions in the way of the liberty you are called upon to bring. And the very place you stand upon. Receive your commendations, your praise,
your encouragement, your security, is an enemy of the liberty you are trying to give. And that's true for all institutions, American Baptist and Southern Baptist, United States and Soviet Union. Every human institution, because it is institution, at some point serves as a deterrent to the liberty to which God brings, at many points helps. Did you hear me? Even I am an enemy to the God that I should serve. Yes, until we come to understand that it's hard for God to find a leader who is free from the protection of his own or her own security, her own well-being. Most of us, the reason we delay so long is we find our primary occupation taking care of ourselves, securing ourselves. Most of us, all of us, one time or another, we become enemies to God. So we have to find a way to let the leaders go. Moses has a burning desire to see change. He's not yet changed the context of his ultimate security. In fact, it is the point between my own security and my own vocation as a liberator that generates much of the friction that gives me this fiery indignation against Rome. Do you hear me? What I'm saying is that my own security is one thing, and the call to a vocation of setting folks free, they all rub against each other. And the easiest thing is, when the friction develops, is to develop great wrath against the oppressor. So out of this rage inside of him, that day when he saw an Egyptian beating one of his people, he rose up, looked this way and that, said the text, and slew the Egyptian, buried the Egyptian in the sand, for his wrath and indignation waxed hot within him. So he acted out of an inadequate analysis and an inappropriate impulse. And according to his own timetable, so God had to set him free. Set him free. When Pharaoh heard about it, it confirmed his suspicion. I always thought there was something wrong with that boy that daughter brought out of that river. I always thought there was something about him that could not be trusted. I always knew that he was not true blue. I always knew that there was an alien spirit in his blood. I could look at him when I gave my orders. Something in him curdled. I knew it. And so I'm going to get him, said Pharaoh. And so Moses was forced to flee, to go back to the backside of the mountain. And in that situation, sometimes it is when we have apparently failed at our mission that the Lord has not allowed us to fail. It's just part of the setting free. Oh, I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. I remember when my own denomination self-destructed out from under me. And I was planning to be my daddy's successor. He was the bishop, and I was going to carry his bag, and I was going to be the next one. But the whole thing broke up to smithereens. And I said, God, how you want me to serve you, and you can't even keep the church together? I was upset. Later on, God told me, Jim, the only reason I set you free from this is it was going to be too confining for your spirit. I didn't want you to come to power in that which would restrict your spirit. So I let it break up. So I could put your foot in a larger place to serve, because you were going to be miserable if some changes had not occurred. I've seen a lighter flashing. I think that has something to do with time to bring this message to an end. And I haven't even gotten to the heart of it. But let me, since this is a seminary community, can I give you the rest of the outline? Can you work it out for yourselves? Let me tell you what happened. I know Moses was bound, for he got back there on the backside of the mountain and stayed there. He stayed there. He had given up. I don't know what to do. I can't deliver those people. I'm going to settle back here with Zipporah and have a family and live my life out, which is what a lot of preachers are doing these days. They're on the backside of the mountain, coasting on in to the golden sunset. But the Lord said, I got to set him free. I got to let my leader go. Therefore, you know the story. Moses was bound. You fix it. He was bound to the law of science. Something burns is supposed to be consumed. He was bound to the secularist assumption. There ain't no God back here that's going to do anything about what's going on down there. He was afraid of being somehow out of touch with the high power, and he was afraid of the people too. He didn't know who he was. His identity wasn't worked out. He wasn't sure of his competencies. He didn't have adequate credentials. He knew he didn't have justifiable credibility. But the Lord said, I got to let my leader go. And therefore, the Lord released this brother, gave him a vision of the bush burning, and it wasn't consumed. And he said, I'm going to turn aside and see what's going on, why the bush is burning and is not consumed. And when he turned aside to see, the Lord spoke to him, called him by name, Moses. When the last time you heard that word, Moses, called him on the backside. And he said, here I am. And the Lord says, I have an agenda. And now that you have figured out that you don't know what to do, and that your spirit is not yet right to do it, and that you did not have the competency to do it, you are just where I want you now. I want you to be my servant. And then began the series of ifs and buts and ands. But Lord, if I go, they will not believe me. But Lord, I am slow of speech. But Lord, I don't know how to do it. But Lord, I don't even know who you are. But the Lord took care of all of his ifs and buts and ands and got him ready. And when he finally came to the end and said, Lord, I can't go, the Lord says, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a brother to go with you. And the brother wasn't perfect, as we shall later on discover, but Aaron was given, and the brother was ready to go. Oh, if I had time to talk about it, I would say, you know what? Before we will serve the liberating agenda of God, we too must be set free from the bondage to the perspectives of those institutions which serve us. Until we can get the distinction between the church I serve and the God of the church who has called me, until you get that, you're not ready. You don't believe me? Ask Jesus. It was after his Lenten trial that he was led to be liberated himself that day in Nazareth. He had to know the difference between the home church and the God who is the home of the universe. And when he finally got kicked out of the synagogue at Nazareth, he was ready to go. Not quite before then, which says to me that the way God lets the leader go is to establish the tension, nourish a new vision of the divine possibility, and then catapult the person into a vocation which is from God to serve the people who are in bondage until they can be set free. I wish I had more time. Oh, I do. Later in the week.